Hi, Bryant here with a little update before we start the show. So we're back from our hiatus. Sorry that took a little bit longer than we had planned. I think we had said it would be 2 or 3 months, and it was actually closer to 6. So sorry, that was mostly my fault. I volunteered to edit this episode when we recorded it back in November, and then I got busy with stuff and procrastinated a little bit. I also got a girlfriend recently, and I've been spending a lot of time with her, and I'm not sorry for that. we'll try and get some episodes edited and released more consistently in the future, but no promises. Also, if anyone out there wants to volunteer their time to help edit episodes, we'd be glad for that. You can email us carsandcomrades@gmail.com. Or maybe we'll do a Patreon and pay someone else to edit. We'll see about that. Also no promises. I also wanted to say that apparently Spotify and YouTube have been deleting some of our older episodes because we used clips from supposedly copyrighted songs in them. I say that because at least one of the songs was not copyrighted. That's why we used it in the first place. And the other ones were, you know, short clips that I think would fall under fair use guidelines, but can't really tell that to a bot, can you? So if you're looking for a specific episode, or if you just want to get all the episodes that we put out, you might have to use a different app, or, you know, just go to where everything is hosted, rss.com/podcasts/carsandcomrades. So that's all, and on to the episode.
All profit is value extraction, and that means that all profit is theft from you.
Corporate America is on welfare, and you've got to get them off welfare.
Hello, and welcome to Cars and Comrades, your favorite socialist car podcast. Hopefully your only one. Actually, not hopefully. I lied. Yeah. I hope that there are more socialist car podcasts out there.
Let a hundred podcasts bloom.
Yes, indeed.
I know we did have a competitor there for like a month. I never heard what happened to them.
Yeah, I don't know. If they're still around, props to them.
Yeah.
Say hey. But yeah, hopefully you're... Yeah. Hopefully we're your favorite car podcast. It's of the socialist inclination. Today we've got the whole crew here. Myself, Zach, Brian, Brandon, and Connor. How you doing, guys?
Hello.
I'm tired.
Okay.
Yeah. Doing good.
All right.
Good enough, anyway.
A little bit of a mixed bag. Got some tired, we got some good. That's good. We'll make it happen.
I'm getting paid well so tired.
Yeah, nice. Brandon is that that proletariat working class blue collar worker that everyone talks about.
I'm the mythical American blue collar communist.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, today we're going to be talking about some bad ideas, both of car manufacturer variety and of our own imagination. But first, I think we're going to do some car updates. Yeah?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right, let's go alphabetical. So, Brandon, take us away.
I've been too busy to do much. So,
easy enough.
I've just been letting my van deteriorate. I now no longer have dash lights or a radio.
Oh, lovely.
But in a shocking turn of events, the thing has just been starting every single day.
Hey, it's trade-offs, you know? No dash lights, no radio, but it starts every time.
My throw-out bearing's getting so bad that it will barely go into first gear now. I forgot we were recording today until very last minute, so I was thinking about trying to pull my transmission today. Because I finally found a video that actually in-depth was a Ford top loader removal and install. And once I actually saw it done, I was like, holy shit, my throw-out bearing might actually be easy to do.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, pulling the transmission is always a headache, but it's because the van sits high and is so over the transmission without like a transmission tunnel, I should just be able to disconnect it and slide it backwards.
Hell yeah.
But then it was raining today anyway when I got out of work, so it didn't matter if we were recording or not. But I did spend 3 days. I stopped driving the Cutlass for like 2 weeks because one of my coworkers comes into work one morning and he was like, "Hey, I was behind you yesterday leaving work. You don't have brake lights." And I'm like, "Well, that's weird. But I checked him like 2 years ago." damned if he wasn't right. It took me 3 days or so, by which I waited like a week and a half to even start looking for it. But I was really proud of myself because we all know what a power probe is, right? Not just like a multimeter, but like a power probe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They fucking rule. They rule so hard. They're the simplest things that you can do so much with. And with just a diagram and a power probe, I was able to find where the connection had failed. And it was just a loose pin at a connector. So it was 2 days of me just like frantically digging through wires and being frustrated and jiggling stuff. And then one day of like, okay, let's actually think about how electricity works and do some diagnostic tests. And once I did that, it took me about 15 minutes to fix.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Shit, I can't remember.
See, whenever I try to do that, I'm always like, maybe this wiring is cursed by demons or something. Because like, I can't think about electronics to save my life. It's all magic as far as I'm concerned.
Dude, a thing that is wildly important and helpful, but somehow really easy to forget, is that if you just test continuity between the body and the wire, it will tell you what's grounding out.
Yeah.
I always forget to, and nothing was grounding out, so that in this case didn't help me. But in other instances, it has saved my ass. I basically just forget everything I know about wiring if I don't have to fix anything electronic for 2 weeks.
Yeah, and then it's like the process of relearning it every time.
See, that's why I don't even fucking bother with it.
Yeah.
I know nothing, and I'll. Well, also, you guys have the same boat.
You have cars with computers.
Yeah.
I have a fuse panel. That is it. And even still, half my shit doesn't work, but
I'm going to be honest. The computer can talk to me. A fuse panel fucking can't. That seems harder to me.
Yeah. I actually
can ask the computer questions and be like, "Hey, is this wrong?" And it's like, "No, that's fine." And I'm like, "Cool. Thanks, computer."
Actually, there was a hot second where I was looking for the brake light thing and actually got the brake lights to come on, which is really hard to figure out by yourself. I just set up my phone behind the car and hit record. And just jiggle, I just do stuff. And I pinched a wire in the process and nearly caught the Cutlass on fire.
You and fire, man. You and fire.
By which I mean it melted the sheathing off the entire wire, and when I caught it, it was literally glowing red.
Because apparently
the wire from my voltmeter is unfused.
Mm.
They just, whoever wired great. That in just went directly to a hot wire, and things were just melting. It welded itself to something under the dash. It got that hot.
Wow,
Jesus. Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah,
that should not happen. Actually,
no, I agree. Actually, but yeah, since I get off of work at 3:30 and I get home at 4 and it's dark at about 5:15, I haven't really got a chance to do a whole lot, and I work a lot of weekends. So that's it. I have functioning turn signals and brake lights in the car right now. And now my alternator squeals so loudly that it's unbearable and I'm still not driving the car. So I got to replace my alternator. And then my car should be fully drivable so I can take the transmission out of my van worry-free.
Yeah.
Should be. Keyword there.
Yeah.
Should be fully drivable.
I'm getting put on second shift. So, one of my actual thought processes was it feels easier on second shift to get a ride to work if I need to.
Hmm.
Like, none of my friends are awake at 6 a.m. But, you know, like, I have enough favors that I've banked that if I was in a pinch and I couldn't get a ride to, or I couldn't get my cars to start, I could reasonably get somebody to give me a ride to work at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, cool. Got any more updates for us then?
Nah.
All right, I think that takes us to Brian. What you got?
I haven't been doing a whole lot because my
garage is still getting worked on. They did put the insulation back in place, but actually, I was meaning to ask you, Zach. I need to call the company that's doing the construction in the first place, maybe tomorrow when they're open. But they seems like they just put the insulation back with a couple sheets of like OSB to hold it in place, and didn't put okay. any drywall back up there.
Okay.
Which I don't think is up to fire code for garages, but I don't know how exactly that works.
Unless it's fire rated OSB, which you should be able to tell, it should say on there like rated.
Okay.
Then no, that's not up to fire code.
Yeah.
As far as I'm aware.
I thought the standard was two layers of drywall to make it for fire safe for a garage. But
I am not sure. I don't do a lot of residential, but that sounds right.
Okay. I'll look into the actual codes before I call them up and just yell at them. But anyways, I'm also hopefully getting the level 2 car charger put in my garage next weekend. Okay. If everything goes according to plan. I've got the charger here. I just need someone to install it and run the wires. And I forget if I mentioned this before, but I can also get a rebate for that from the utility company.
Nice.
So that'll basically pay for itself. And then maybe even some on top of that. But I guess what I have been doing is, since I can't, you know, work on the MR2, I went and got wheels from junkyards, various junkyards around, from Chevy Cruze, which has the same lug nut wheel bolt pattern as the bolt. They're all kind of built on the same Daihatsu chassis.
Correction, it's actually Daewoo, not Daihatsu. Actually, Daewoo was absorbed into General Motors, so now it's General Motors of South Korea.
And I just dropped those off at the tire shop yesterday to get snow tires put on them. I was talking with you guys, like, maybe I should go use tires, but, like, everyone wants, like, you know, 60% of the cost of brand new tires for stuff that's, like, 50% worn out.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'll just get new ones. It's like, I can afford it. It's going to be a little bit of a pinch, but, you know, whatever. So, yeah, I got, if I remember correctly. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that actually reminds me. I have a bunch of wheels and tires that I need to sell from my Subaru that I'm not going to be using anymore. So, if you need Subaru wheels or tires, hit me up.
Got
a bunch.
Oh, and also, since last time we recorded, I sold the Subaru.
Let's
go.
Yeah, so it went better than I thought. Like, I think I had it listed for $4,000 or $3,800, and the guy gave me $3,600 for it. So about $1,000 less than I paid for it 7 years ago.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, you did great. Of course, I've, like, fixed a lot of shit that was wrong with it in that time, but yeah, this guy was buying it for his teenage daughter because he doesn't want her to be texting on her phone. He wants her driving a manual transmission instead. So
does he drive a manual? Because I feel like if he did, he would know that that ain't necessarily gonna stop somebody from doing that, not for long anyway.
Yeah, maybe it's wishful thinking, and I don't know if it's a good idea to give a teenager WRX, but I don't know. At least it has airbags, so.
I would have gotten into a lot of trouble with the WRX as a teenager, but I don't know. Not everybody is as much of a hooligan.
Yeah, I think that girl is going to be real cool. She's going to be real popular with that thing.
And I did tell him, hey, if you ever decide to sell this, let me know. I might buy it back off of you, but, you know, we'll see. But yeah, it went better than I thought. He just kind of showed up, asked a few questions, said, yeah, here's some cash, and signed the paperwork, and it's gone. So I don't have that to worry about.
Nice.
But yeah, like driving the last few days, we had a big snowstorm in Denver, and driving on the kind of worn all-season tires with that car is a little sketchy, so...
This explains a lot, because you've been talking about snow tires a lot in the group chat, and my head has been in a place where in Pittsburgh it's 80 degrees, and I'm like, who is worried about snow tires right now? But that makes more sense.
Yeah. But yeah, I went with the Blizzaks again.
Great choice.
205/60 R16, I think. So about the same outer diameter as the stock wheels, so it won't throw off the... speedometer, slightly narrower, like I think 10 millimeters narrower. It'll, in theory, kind of go down into the snow a little bit, sink down. You know, we'll see if in practice that works, but it's got to be better than what I've got on there now. So I'm looking forward to picking those up tomorrow and putting them on the car and, you know, not being scared to drive to work. So.
Yeah. I've been rocking a rear-wheel drive pickup truck in the snow, and it's been surprisingly good. Like, it's done okay. I haven't really gotten stuck or slid around too much. The tail end got a little squirrely on me, like, once, but it was very easy to correct. So, I've been doing all right with it. It's a little bit of an adjustment from an all-wheel drive car, but it does okay.
Well, at least it's a long wheelbase, so you can catch it when it slides.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing I was thinking of, I'm not sure if I want to put coilovers on the Bolt. I was talking to you guys, like, maybe I just want to do lowering springs. Because it rides a little bit firm as it is. And I don't know if I want to go, you know, most coilovers are quite a bit more firm than stock. But I do want it a little bit lower, and I did see someone talking about how you can get like non-adjustable but like more performance oriented rear shocks for I forget if it was a Chevy Cruze or something else that has a similar architecture, that you can just, like, you know, put a little spacer in there and it'll bolt in just fine. So I might do that, because I definitely noticed that it's kind of bouncing in the rear. And it might not be a bad idea just to get new struts all around, because it's, you know, 98,000 miles on this thing. So I don't know. I'll get to that when I get to it. There's plenty of other stuff I need to do in the meantime, but, maybe this will feed into I'll talk about that later when we're talking about bad ideas. But I've got some bad ideas for that car.
All right.
But yeah, that's all I got.
Connor?
All right.
That brings us to you.
Cool. Well, I don't really have terribly too much. The Camaro, as far as I know, has not had a single offer on it, which is not great.
Oof.
I've been working for a few weeks, like over a month now, to try and get them to drop the price, which... they will do, but, like, I'm trying to get them to, like, match the price drop a little bit, where I'm like, all right, well, I'll drop it $1,000. How about you take $1,000 off too, you know? And they're like, yeah, maybe we can do that. We'll ask and whatever. And then I have to keep following up, like, all right, well, did you ask? Like, I'll drop it $1,000 without you. I don't give a shit, but, like, can you give me a fucking answer? Nothing. So, like, for over a month, I've been trying to drop the price on this thing, and no luck. So I'll call them again this week and be like, hey, did you get anywhere with this or what? But
remind me what you're asking for it now.
It's technically listed for $22,000,
okay,
which is too much. With it listed for $22,000, that's me taking $17,000, which is not that much. I mean, it's a fair amount, but, like, I've put a lot of money into this car, like a lot. Which obviously
I would,
you never
honestly. Honestly, like, how locked in are you to this consignment?
So,
like, could you pull it out and just sell it yourself?
Yeah.
Because,
so,
like,
My
honestly, it seems worth the hassle to deal with the Facebook Marketplace assholes.
Yeah. So my thinking is
just get it sold for $17.
My thinking here is, I'm going to use the consignment place as a storage facility for the next few months until roughly about March, and then I will.
There you go.
Then I'll pull it in. Probably, you know, see if I can sell it myself on Facebook Marketplace. If not, maybe go to another consignment place. Like, the car's got to sell, and I'll take a fucking big loss on it if I have to. Which, I mean, already I'm taking a big loss on it. There's no way around it. But, like, I have time to sell it, but I also am like, all right, well, I don't have time to sit around for 6 months getting zero offers. Like, that's not what I need. So, yeah, so it's kind of like, we'll see what happens, but there's a good chance that I'm just going to use them as a storage facility for right now, which is convenient enough. So that's kind of, that's really my update on the Camaro is it's in storage. Technically for sale, but it's in storage.
I forgot where I heard this. Maybe it was one of you guys who was talking about someone they knew who had some kind of a classic car or whatever that would do basically that, would take it to a consignment or whatever dealership to sell on consignment and just like store it there for the winter for, you know, $500 or whatever it costs to get it back from them. Sounds like a pretty good, you know, deal if you want to do that.
Yeah, I forget what it is if it comes out, but I don't think it's a terrible cost to me. Like, it is what it is. But yeah, so I'm thinking about that. The 350Z, no real updates. I've been pretty lazy lately, so I haven't been working on it too much. I did just do a drift event since the last time we recorded, that I remember. So I did do one more event at US Air, the fun track, and the car was overheating like crazy, as it does. So it's like, well, you know, it is what it is. Now, before that event, I started noticing some oil leaking issues. And I could see it was coming from, like, it was on the back of the motor up towards the top of the heads. So I was like, oh, maybe it's like valve cover gaskets or something. But I was like, I don't know. It's not coming down the sides anywhere. It's only on the back. So I was like, it could be any number of things, whatever. So I took it to, my mechanic. And I was like, especially cause I was going out of town. I was like, well, here, I've got a few extra days. Why don't you take a look at it? Tell me what you think. Here's where I'm seeing the leaks. And, like, it would drip in just the right way that, like, the oil would drip onto my headers and, like, start smoking and shit. So,
Sounds like a Subaru.
Well, and the thing that was weird that I was having a hard time with was, it was, like, I would hit a bump the right way and I would smell burning oil. Or I would take, like, a turn the right way with enough G-force and I would smell burning oil. But drifting, no burning oil. None. It was very weird. So I was like, why is it only coming out sometimes? Well, anyway, the mechanic took a look at it and he says, you know what? It looks like it's these cam sensors on the back. The O-rings that seal them in there are looking pretty shitty. He thought that's where the oil was coming from. Sure enough, he pulls them off and yeah, that's where the oil was coming from. So that explains why it was on the back of the motor and why it was so high up. And, you know, his suspicion was, well, it's probably you're cooking them because the car's overheating, it's getting hot under there, and the car just runs pretty hot in general. And I was like, yeah, that's probably what's going on there. So I still have cooling issues that I'm gonna have to figure out for next season. You know, it's kind of like, it's been hard to troubleshoot because it only happens at the track that's 4 hours away and not at the track that's closer. So like, I can't, there's only so much I could do. But I've
you're on an aftermarket radiator, I'm assuming.
Yep.
Like a big aluminum
yep.
thing. Have you considered putting an oil cooler in as well?
It's one of the things I am considering, yeah. So that's okay. On the list of like put very like highly likely mods I'll be doing in the near future is an oil cooler. I don't know how much of a difference that's really gonna make, but it's definitely one of the things I'm doing. The other thing my mechanic did was he took out the reflectors in my front bumper, which will hopefully allow some more air because they're kind of on the side of the bumper. Hopefully it allows some more air in while I'm sideways. I think I'm going to try and like cut out some like plexiglass or something to put in like some ducting so that, like, I'm guiding air right into the radiator a little bit more effectively. And yeah. I'll probably use, like, a hose to guide air right from those reflector inlets into the radiator. So hopefully that kind of stuff will make a difference. I also have a lower temp thermostat, but I don't know that that's... It might make some difference, but, like, once you get pretty hot, it doesn't matter because the thermostat's all the way open, right? It's not like... it just starts off at a lower temp, so maybe I won't overheat quite as easily. I don't know.
Are you on stock fans?
Nope. Upgraded, aftermarket, no. Super-duper cool fans.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so I hear a lot about this going either way. In theory... And again, I've been proven wrong about this several times. In theory, a lower temp thermostat will increase your cooling problems.
You think?
It can. I have heard that. I don't know the science behind it, but I have heard that.
It can be kind of weird.
It's because if your thermostat opens sooner, then the coolant that's in the radiator spends less time in the radiator, so it's already warmer when it goes back into the engine.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I hadn't even considered that. There's a number of reasons I'm genuinely not thinking it's going to be the solution to my problems. It's one of those, it could be, either. I already have it. Like, I literally already have the lower temp thermostat. So I think it's something I'm going to throw in, and if it doesn't do it, it doesn't do it. You know what I mean? Theoretically,
have
when I'm
drifting...
Have
you tried a cold air intake?
Well, theoretically, at the same time, it's like, it's already overheating, right? Like, it's not a case of, well, the thermostat's open, so it's like, well, it was open 40 degrees ago. Like, we're way past it's spending less time in the radiator. Hopefully, in theory. Like I said, I don't know. I don't think that's honestly the right solution.
Talking about getting a vented hood?
Yes. So before I do that, I do need to verify that that's the problem. Which, like... I want to get a vented hood probably anyway. It's just they're, you know, $1,200 or something. Like, it's...
I told you a whole
song. Run it without a hood and see how it does.
Well, that's the plan, right? So I have to be at that particular track when it's warm enough. So it's got to be, like, over 70 degrees. But, yeah, the plan is, okay, make sure get it to overheat once. Once it does that, take it to the pits, take the hood off, then see how it does. If that solves the problem entirely, then I know that that's all I got to do. So, yeah, there's a couple little things I'm going to do before that, and maybe I won't even have to worry, but, yeah, that's kind of the idea.
You have headers on it, right?
I do.
Are they wrapped?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, I know.
I was going to say, like, you've got to have heat management on exhaust parts, but I'm just racking my brain for every little thing that could be...
And it's still crazy an issue, hot. But obviously, it is crazy hot under the hood.
Yeah. Yeah, like, obviously you've taken all the necessary steps to this point, so...
Yeah, so a few little
things...
It
seems like that might be the solution.
A few little just things I can try, and, you know, I'll give them a shot, but I think, you know, it's something I have to take seriously is all. That's the important
thing. Is that an aluminum engine? Like, is your block and heads aluminum?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
This might be veering into the bad ideas category, but... You could rig up something with a, or just reroute your windshield washer nozzle to point at the radiator.
I thought of something like that, and I didn't love the idea. I was like, I've seen people who, especially who run like 2JZ engines and stuff, they run real hot, and a lot of them will bring like chemical sprayers to the track that they fill with water, and like every few runs they'll go into the pits and they'll spray it down. I'm just like, that seems like I would rather find other solutions so that I don't have to do that and stop every few runs to cool it down like that.
Or you could do water methanol injection, and then you could even run lower octane gas.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know if that does anything for actually the heat buildup in the engine bay, though. That's specifically like intake temperatures.
Not necessarily. So part of it is because I have such advanced timing, there's more time that there's fire in the engine causing more heat dissipation after. Like, if you run it super hot like that and you're running a pretty relatively lean, you know, you're not running too rich, your advanced timing. You spend a lot more time with fire in the engine than not, and so it does it spikes the temperatures. So that
would E85 cool you down or no?
Maybe. It's something I want to. It's something I'd like to tune in at some point, but that's I wouldn't be doing it for cooling. Maybe it has that effect if I'm lucky, but I'm not.
I think ethanol has a higher latent heat of enthalpy than gasoline does, so it could help.
Yeah, I've heard people say that.
It certainly does on turbo cars.
Yeah.
I know turbo cars, it'll drop your temps quite a bit.
Yeah, so it's a possibility, but yeah. Anyway, cooling is going to be the name of the game for me next season. That's going to be kind of my big thing to tackle. But other than that, really nothing else.
I'm going to try real hard to be cool next season, too.
You know, another one of my possibly bad ideas, but, you know, you don't need that carbon fiber vented hood. Just get a hole saw, you know, and you can put the cooling right where it needs to be. Huh?
What do you say? Or even part of a saw.
Yeah.
Instead of a hole saw. Zing.
I mean, you could get just an angle grinder. Just create your own shapes.
Yeah,
you know, make it
hammer and sickle
fun
cut
with
out
it.
Of the hood.
Yeah,
now we're talking. Or a circle A.
Yeah,
yeah.
Or both. Why not?
That
more
would
cooling.
Look sick.
Historically, more cooling. The hammer and sickle is more effective.
Oh, and you could light it from underneath.
That would be cool. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah,
I'm
that would actually
mine.
Be super sick.
Well, Zach, how about you?
Oh, you know, I haven't really done too much here recently. Got a new job, so I've been working quite a lot. Haven't really had time to do much on the Subaru. I don't know where I left you guys last, but I've got the motor out. I've got, excuse me, I've got the new motor pretty well set up. I've got a new turbo on it, new up pipe, external wastegate set up. Headers, bigger turbo inlet for the bigger turbo, new injectors, all the good goodies to put the motor back in. But I'm going to be building the cage first, and the cage could potentially come through the firewall and tie into the front shock towers. So I need to leave the motor out until I get the cage in. So that's... This does tie into the bad ideas, but I have been considering getting a new daily since my WRX is out of commission and my truck is rear-wheel drive. Not super fun to drive in the snow. So I was looking at all-wheel drive cars, and of course I came across one that I want you guys to guess what you think it is.
It's another Subaru.
I'm going to give you a few facts about it, and you're going to have to guess what it is.
Okay. My initial guess is it's another Subaru. So.
Oh, wild-ass guess.
I will tell you.
Wild-ass Honda guess, Accord, yeah. What is it? Honda Accord Cross, whatever.
Oh, the, like, okay. Cross Tour?
Cross Tour, yeah.
Yeah.
That's not it?
No.
Okay.
No. Let me give you guys some details. I'll give you a big hint. It's not a Subaru.
Okay.
I'll give you a huge hint, actually. It's made... by Nissan. It's only comes in automatic. It's a V6 twin turbo. It's all-wheel drive, and it's a coupe.
What? Is this a GTR?
I didn't know Nissan made something besides the Altima.
Okay, hold on. You gotta give me these facts again, because, like...
Yes. Play along at home. Tell me what you think this is. It's produced by Nissan. It's all-wheel drive. It's got a V6 twin turbo. It only comes in a coupe, and it only comes in automatic.
Is this
twin
a
turbo
Infiniti?
V6? What twin turbo V6 do they have? God.
Is this the Infiniti something?
It is.
I forget what it's called, but is that the engine that it sits in the new Z that started off?
I'm not sure. I think it might be.
Uh-huh.
I actually don't know, but I think there's a good chance that it is the same engine.
Oh, like
because
a
it is a Nissan.
50, you think? Or 60?
You're close.
I don't know.
Yes?
A Q60.
A Q60S.
What? Wait. This new job must be paying. Are they hiring?
And they can be had. They can be had used with relatively low miles for $25,000.
Really?
Really.
Ooh.
So it's literally like a baby GTR.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's V6 twin turbo, all-wheel drive, coupe, only comes in automatic. It's a Nissan product, and it's literally, you can have them for like $25,000. For like the top of the line, like red 400 or something.
Holy shit, I can't remember
what the exact like model is, but yeah, the top of the line, most performance one.
Yeah, that's
25 to 27.
I'm pretty sure that is the same engine as what's in the Z. So
the new Z,
especially the red line or the whatever they call it, the red eye versions or whatever the fuck it is.
Red 400, I think.
Yeah,
is what it is. Yeah.
Damn, yeah. 25. So that's my. Man, that's it. I didn't know that was possible.
I know.
That's crazy.
I know. I'm like low key. This is like a hidden gem.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I kind of want one really bad, but like I know that I'm gonna want to mod it too as soon as I get it, and I just need a reliable daily driver that like can get me through the snow. So like I'm with Brandon. I'm getting a Honda Fit. Like realistically, I'm getting a Honda Fit, but like I really want a Q60.
But you can dream.
I find Fits with like 200,000 miles for like $4,000. And I'm like, yo, this thing's got 100,000 miles left in it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
It never really occurred to me to pay attention to this, but like, I've had my van for 3 or 4 years now, and I've put something like 15,000 miles on it. Hmm. I just don't drive that much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So if I buy like a high mileage vehicle, like it will basically just be to get me to work and back. It will last forever.
I mean, as you were talking, I was like, that's not what I would spend $25,000 on, but it does seem like a nice car, so, but...
Yeah, and it's an Infiniti, so it's, like, very luxury, you know? Yeah. Like, the interiors are all, like, super nice, heated steering wheel, heated seats, leather, all the fancy jazz.
I don't know what the joke is here, but given that you're talking about buying a Honda Fit and you love Fit for an autopsy, there's something there.
Honda Fit for an autopsy.
Oh, that would be cool. Get a bunch of like big vinyl decals on the side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that would be honestly pretty sick.
Paint an autopsy scar on the hood.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just make a custom badge that like where it says Honda Fit, I'll make it say Honda Fit for an autopsy.
Yeah. I was going to suggest if you guys are, or the listener, if you're having trouble finding a Honda Fit, a good alternative might be the Toyota Matrix or Pontiac Vibe. Just a, you know, compact hatchback. I think it's a little bit bigger than a Fit. Not as performance oriented unless you get the GTS version or whatever.
Yeah, Vibe GT.
Yeah.
I know.
People keep recommending me like, oh, if you're thinking about buying a Fit, consider this other thing. And it's not even that I think that they're ever wrong. Just stop distracting me.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fit's what you need.
I'm locked in.
Yeah, the Fit seems to be the move, honestly.
I've known a handful of people with Pontiac Vibes, which they've been out of production for a while. So yeah, I don't know. But everyone that I knew that had those liked them, except for that the name was Vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You said the Fit is the move, but I think there actually is a scooter called a Honda Move, but never mind.
Oh, get a Fit and a Move and put your Move in the back of your Fit? That's the move.
I don't know if the Move would fit in the Fit, though.
Ooh, that might be a tight fit.
Yeah.
Alex has assured me that as long as I get 2009 and up, they're fairly roomy on the inside.
Okay.
Honestly, I wouldn't be opposed to a Honda Insight either. I think they're ugly as sin, but like they're also very cool.
Yeah.
What are those?
I think we talked about those with Alex a little bit.
Those are the ones that have the covers over the rear wheels for like aerodynamics.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
I think they weigh less than 2,000 pounds. Is that correct?
They're very light. I don't know the exact specs, but yeah, they're right around 2,000 or maybe even...
Yeah, the Fit is literally just what I've dialed in on because it is reliable. you don't last forever and gets good fuel economy. So that's... I have gotten so many criticisms from a lot of my friends. Like, what? You're going to buy a new car? And I'm just like, dude, I need to get to work every day.
Right? Having a car that doesn't create problems for itself every couple weeks is, like, such a dream.
My partner has children, and I don't have 3 seatbelts amongst all of my vehicles.
Yeah.
For the record, first-gen Honda Insight is about 1,975 pounds.
Which, not with my fat ass in it.
Yeah, so you're just shy of a ton with no one in it.
I'm not that sure big.
With driver.
Oh, the car.
The car, yeah. But, yeah, that's all I've got. Do we want to get going on the topic here?
I was confused by this topic. You say automotive bad ideas like we have other kinds.
Yeah, maybe this is like a little bit of self-criticism. This is a struggle session or whatever, but also like I just have so many bad ideas. I you know, can't just got to share them with everyone.
You've got that tinkerer way about you where you're like, with just a lot of money and an exorbitant amount of effort, I could do a really cool thing with this 49cc motor.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not as much as that one guy on YouTube, Two Stroke Stuffing. That's like his entire job now. He's like, he gets Patreon money to try and build the most powerful two-stroke 50cc moped engine. But I don't know. I kind of wish I had that that gig that he does, but I don't know.
Yeah, living the dream right there.
So does anyone want to go first with some bad ideas?
I'm going to be thematic here because I have worked a lot and came in unprepared. And since I drive an Oldsmobile, I'm going to go with Oldsmobile stuff.
Okay.
In the 80s, I haven't even looked up everything to have the numbers in front of me, but in the 80s, Oldsmobile made a diesel V8. I think it was a 350 that was neither reliable, nor did it make a lot of power, nor did it have good fuel economy.
Yeah.
It simply existed.
Yeah.
And then the engines became super popular because it was a diesel block, so it was super stout, and then you could just convert it over to gasoline and make a race motor out of it.
I think it was strong for a gas block, but weak for a diesel block.
That
so that was
right.
Part of the problem. But that reminds me of the guy that converted a Cummins 6BT to gasoline just to show that you could do it.
Well,
yeah. Cummins and he made like similar torque numbers to the diesel yeah. version.
Not Cummins. I was just reading today about one of the 6-cylinder diesel engines that actually has like a gas variant that's offered. Nobody knows.
Nissan?
No, it was like, maybe it wasn't Cummins, but I thought it was Cummins. Because I thought it was like a 6BT variant. It was supposed to be run off of gas or LP, I think.
Oh, well, they made compression ignition versions that run off of natural gas.
This had spark, coil packs and spark plugs.
Really? Okay. Huh.
Interesting. What was it offered in?
I don't even know if it was like came in a car or it was just something that the company was willing to offer. I wish I would have read more. I read a headline in the first paragraph out of curiosity. But
fair. No, that's very interesting. I would love to see a 6BT gas variant and see what it would do.
Yeah, because in my head, it offers a lot of the advantages of the diesel, but I don't have to do 20-gallon oil changes.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm going to go...
Yeah, I had to do an oil change on my F-250, and it took a little over 14 quarts.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
So it's like 3.5 gallons or something?
Yeah.
So I actually considered a 4BT swap for my 69 Chevy van as just like a touring option, like something where like it would be drivable. I could, you know, get around, get good mileage on it. And because of the cost of diesel and the cost of oil changes, my fuel economy over like 5,000 miles would have been marginally better than a gas motor.
Right.
Or not fuel economy, but like, you know, cost per mile. Savings.
Cost.
Yeah.
Cost per mile.
It, like, literally, yeah, it would have taken like, a decade just to pay for the swap.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a very bad fuel economy diesel motor in my F-250. I'm getting like 14 miles to the gallon and driving a lot for this job. So I need to get something, whether it be a Fit or I don't know, but
an Infiniti.
I got a lot, an Infiniti Q60 maybe. I got a lot of money tied up in fuel right now.
Now, I don't know how this works, but can you take that used oil and put it back in the fuel tank? Will that work with your engine?
I don't think so, but I mean, there's only one way to find out, right?
It would definitely work.
I mean, I've heard of people doing that. I don't know how good of an idea it is, but
that,
you know, that's that's the show we're doing is bad ideas.
So. Honestly and truly, you probably wouldn't notice a difference if just once every fill-up you put a quart of oil in it.
Yeah. Or, like, go siphon some used cooking oil out of the tank behind the fast food place or whatever.
Can't really get away with that anymore.
I know some ways.
No, I'm not saying that there aren't ways. It's just, it's we could do a whole episode on that alone. That whole thing is not what it was. And I'm saying that because I used to know one of the guys who was, like, big, established in the, like, biodiesel conversion world, and he got out of it because he said that it's dead.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay.
That's unfortunate because, I would totally swap my truck to biodiesel if I could.
Just because the market for biodiesel suddenly exists now, so it's harder to get cheap biodiesel.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean,
it's not worth
if you can
pay in a gallon.
I mean, if you can get some use cooking oil for free, I think that's maybe where it makes sense, but you just basically have to make like a meth lab in your garage to process it into biodiesel. And there's a lot of, you know, noxious chemicals that are involved with that.
Are there? I don't really know the process.
I think it involves sodium hydroxide, like lye, and methanol. And I think it makes toxic gases when you mix everything together. So I don't remember. Like I did something about this in college, like I researched for some project or whatever, and like, yeah, you can do it, it's just a chore, you know.
I was under the impression that you basically just filtered the vegetable oil and ran a tank heater.
Oh, well, yeah, that's straight vegetable oil or SVO or something like that, so that's one way of doing it, and that'll work with certain mechanically injected diesel engines. The problem is it just causes a lot of carbon buildup and can wear out your engine prematurely.
So. Okay, and my automotive bad idea of my own, and I think I've talked about this here before, the Oldsmobile 403 block is, the bore and stroke is like a tuna can. Like, it's a huge bore and a really short stroke. But what you
it's got that chode stroke.
Yes. But what you can do is you can take a big block Olds crank and grind it down to fit the journals. The method I heard recommended is grind it down to fit big block Chevy rods, so you actually have cheap rod options. You have to have custom pistons made so that like all of the heights match up and you're not, you know, getting like 14-to-1 compression and just plowing into the heads. But yeah, if you bore out the block and stroke with that crank, I forget the exact number, but it's something like it's a small block with a 513 or 520 something cubic inch displacement.
Damn.
Holy shit.
And a block that will crack if you rev it past $5,000.
I was going to say, yeah. How is that going to hold up?
You're going to produce like 700 pounds of torque at idle.
Yeah.
How much horsepower, though?
150.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, 150. Like.
Realistically, you would maybe 300.
Okay.
Oh my god.
Which, I mean, it's not nothing, but you know, out of a 500 cubic inch motor.
And that's what, like 8 liters or something like that.
I'm always bad at the liter conversion.
Yeah.
It's something like that.
Yeah, eight
yeah, something. That's a great bad idea. I love that bad idea.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, as long as you, like, rev up to, like, 4,500 and then shift, you're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just got to have a really good rev limiter on that.
Pair it with a manual transmission and just shift yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just rip every stump out of the ground you see. at 45 miles an hour.
Snap an axle just driving to work.
Honestly, if I build my 455 the way I want it to, I'll be making about 600 pound-feet of torque, so that is a concern.
Yeah.
Just roasting tires off the line every time.
I'll get up to 50 miles an hour real quick. Actually, no, if I do that build the way I want it to, it should still be 400 to 450 horsepower.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, not bad, just...
Nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, I think I definitely do this, but, you know, we see so many YouTube videos where it's like, I make 2,500 horsepower, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of easy to forget that even 300 or 400 horsepower in a good car is still a lot of fucking power.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be making 400 horsepower in my WRX as a rally car, and that's too much. Like, I'll need to turn it down.
Yeah.
Because... that's going to be way too much for that class of racing. So, yeah, 300-400 horsepower is quite a lot in a street car.
I met up with one of my college friends that I hadn't seen in a while who drives a Prius. And I'm like, you want to drive the Bolt real quick? He's like, oh, yeah, sure. And I'm like, oh, you can go full throttle here. And he did. And he's like, oh, Jesus. So even just 200 horsepower to someone that drives a Prius seems like a lot.
Okay, let's be real fucking clear about that, because I've been in that car. That thing is a monster off the line. With five people in it, it just does not even flinch when you punch it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's not about peak power with that setup. It's area under the curve. So, like, it's making, you know, 250 foot-pounds of torque at like 40 miles an hour, basically. Like, it's a one speed transmission, so I don't know, like, RPMs or whatever. It's just, yeah, here's some power.
Yeah, I mean, well, you figure electric motors completely differently. I don't fully understand it, but yeah, it's, you're just always making that bunch of torque.
And I'm hoping that if I get some actually good sticky tires on it, I can, like, turn off the traction control and get even more torque to the wheels. But we'll see about that.
Cool. So who's got another bad idea?
I could go.
Yeah, go for it.
So I'm going to talk about a bad idea from, I mean, almost not surprisingly, a German automaker.
What?
Yeah, they're not known for any bad ideas ever or over-engineering anything for any reason. So, yeah, so this is a good one. It's one of those, it was cool in a way. It was sort of a fun little gimmick, but there's no part of it that seems like it was a good idea from the start. I'm like, from the design, I'm like, yeah, it seems like maybe you shouldn't have done that. It, you know, just my opinion. But anyway, so I'm talking about the... produced from 1989 to 1991 was the original two-seat rear-wheel drive roadster, the Z1.
So, by BMW?
By BMW. Right, I forgot to mention it was BMW. So,
no worries.
Obviously, you know, our listeners are probably a little more familiar with, like, the Z3 and the Z4. The Z1 was obviously the first one, and it had a number of features that were kind of cool. It had, like, plastic body panels. It was fairly lightweight. I think it was like around 2,800 pounds or so, even with the stupid ass thing I'm about to talk about, which is even more surprising. So they actually came with a 2.5 liter straight six motor as well. That didn't make a ton of power, but like in a car that kind of light, I think it was like 168 horsepower in a 2,800 pound car. Like, that's not bad. But anyway,
you're in the ballpark of like a Datsun Z car.
Yeah.
Like a 240 or something like that.
It's a respectable roadster, for sure.
I mean, maybe it's because you said plastic body panels, but this is making me think of like a Saturn SC1 coupe. Like the... Mm. So like those didn't make as much power, but they were, I think, like 2,400 pounds
yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah, they're lightweight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I suspect this car probably could have been a little bit lighter if they didn't do the thing I'm going to talk about. So, the thing that this car is probably most famous for, and you've probably seen it, but it was retractable doors that would, instead of, like, the door opening, like, outwards or even upwards, the door went down like a power window, essentially, and it, like, retracted into the body. And there was no real reason for it. I mean, I think they said... I think it was just gimmicky. Ideally, it was like, they thought, like, oh, it'll be easier to get into, but, because of this design, the door sill was so fucking high that, like, it was probably genuinely very difficult to get in. Because you had to, like, step up into this little low-to-the-ground roadster. You'd have to, like, step up into it.
Yeah, it's low to the ground, so you don't have to step that high.
Yeah, so it had the, like, disappearing doors, and it was just kind of silly. I mean, it basically had, like, these electric motors and rubber studded like belts that like you might see on like a supercharger or something, and these like rubber belts would pull down the door and it would like disappear into the body. I mean, I don't know how else to it was just so silly. Now, I mean, like, it looks kind of cool in the sense that like it's unusual, so like I'll give it credit for that. But yeah,
I would say it's like if you watch Blade Runner, the way they dress seems really cool, but then if you go out on the street dressed like that, you look like an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, I feel like that's the perfect comparison.
Yes, it really is. It is just like that. I also think that like one of the things they said was because of the high door sills, technically it offered crash protection independent of the doors, because obviously if you think about it, if the doors are retracted down, which you could still drive with the doors down, by the way, like almost like looking like a Jeep person but like dumber, you could drive that way. you could drive that way, but like technically it offered like rigidity enough to be the crash protection, although to that I would say, what if the bumper of the car fits inside the empty right. space where the door is supposed to be? No answer back on that, I'm sure. But yeah, so I mean, it was interesting. I would recommend maybe listeners like check out pictures of it because it's certainly bizarre, but yeah, not like a great idea. I think it was probably bad to waste any resources with this quote-unquote innovation. You may have noticed you don't see it on any cars today because it wasn't good. it wasn't good.
We and just still haven't reached the part of the future where that's appropriate yet.
Yeah, that's probably going to come at some point. I bet Elon Musk is going to do it. I'm calling it now. That's a very Elon Musk idea. And then he'll be like, I'm the first one to do it. Yeah, so that's like my dumb automotive idea from a car maker. The other one, so I initially kind of had a different interpretation of Brian's like question here. So my thinking was, what is an idea that a car company should do that is dumb, but they should do it anyway, even though it is dumb?
Like it would make you happy, but it wouldn't actually sell any more cars?
Correct, yeah. Okay. So my thinking on that was, I think it'd be cool if a car manufacturer would just make a hydraulic handbrake like all the drift cars have. They're very popular these days. And not like an inline setup, because that would probably... There are some safety concerns with an inline setup like what I have. Because like if I pull the handle and try and hit the foot brake, it won't work. So what a lot of people will do with drift cars who are have more money or time or whatever than I do, a lot of people will do a dual caliper setup so that the handbrake has its own like master cylinder and reservoir, and it'll only work on a separate set of calipers to the rear. So that, like, your rear wheel will have two sets of calipers, one operated by the foot brake and one by the handbrake. So if a new car maker was going to make a new car with this, that's probably the setup they would have to do. And I think it could be done for not that much money. I don't know. I'm not going to say it would sell a lot of cars, but it would sell a few. A very small number, but a part of me thinks it would probably... Like, technically, you could call it a safety feature. Whether that flies, I don't know. It's a very dangerous safety feature. But it could technically be considered... I mean, hey, cars already come with parking brakes. Technically, it's just a stronger version of that. So, you know, I think it'd be cool if somebody just fucking did it. Just fucking make it. Put it
for
on
safety,
the Camaro.
We put a fire extinguisher in the car. For fun, we put gasoline in the fire extinguisher.
to make that slide, I think you would have to have like a dual setting on it where like it had like a ratchet, like a normal handbrake, to where you could like lock it into position to have a stronger handbrake or like a stronger
there would have to brake. Like you would have to like basically have a locking switch. Mechanism, yeah, like a switch or a locking mechanism that like you pull it back to a certain point and like it'll lock in place or something. So like it could be done. I think it could be sold and everybody would know why it's really there, but technically you might be able to get away with it. I think it would add cost to a vehicle. I think it would vastly improve the cool level of the car. It would probably sell zero cars and cost the company money. So like it's a bad idea, but it could be cool. That's my thinking.
It's a bad idea if profit is the motive.
Yes, in a socialist economy, we could make cars like this just because they're fucking cool. That's the biggest, best reason to do a revolution right now.
I don't know if that logic holds.
And we could also make cars with retractable doors because that's cool.
That's
too.
A dumb idea. That's actually dumb. Let's not do that.
But it looks so cool.
How is
it
that
does
on,
not
on a Tesla?
Yeah. Just give it some time.
Yeah, it will be.
No, because that would involve him making a new model of car.
Well, it'll probably like take your fingers off if you actually accidentally put your hand in the wrong place.
No, it will just break them.
It'll have a sensor designed that when it feels a certain amount of resistance or it snaps the finger off, it'll stop. Just like the Cybertruck, which works 60% of the time. Yeah, so that's kind of my dumb idea. For me, a personal bad idea is one that I'm probably just going to actually fucking do, and I'll be complaining about it in my car updates in future episodes.
I've driven your car. It's most of the things you've already done.
Yeah. My car's already pretty much undrivable. That's what I was telling them early. I was like, I don't want to talk about dumb ideas that I have because I've done them all to the car already, and it turns out they're all bad.
Did a single one of us drive Connor's car and not stall it out the first try?
No.
Yeah, it's a little rough. A little rough around the edges, for sure. Not great to drive to work, or in the winter, or really ever. But, no, my dumb idea is I think that I should further degrade the reliability by adding, like, a supercharger or a turbo setup in the next, probably
I
not
sign
next
off
year.
On this. Yes.
Yeah,
not
maybe
both.
A year after. It's just what I need. So yeah, I should probably put some forced induction on there because I feel like if I had about 500 horsepower, then I would really actually have the reliability I'm looking for.
Yeah, which is almost none, but
like it would be cool, and I would get like lots of credit from all the. All the youngins who are all the kids into cars now, they'd be like, damn, that car is so cool. And I'd be like, yeah, you should follow my lead and do all of this shit to your car. It's great. So that's all my dumb ideas. I think, Zach, you're the last one, right?
I've got some dumb ideas for sure.
Hell yeah, I knew you would. You always do.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna take a page from Connor's book and give you a nice German car to start with, who had a dumb idea. And I have a first-hand knowledge of this dumb idea. If you're a long-time listener, you might remember I had an Audi S4 that had some timing chain issues.
Yep.
And the way that Audi designed this motor is that they put the timing chains, which tend to fail, on the rear of the engine, in between the block and the transmission. So you have to take the entire engine out to do the timing, and it is a massive, massive pain in the ass. Like, the proper way to do it is actually to take the transmission out with the engine, which involves taking the CV axles out, which involves disconnecting the knuckles from the their supports, so the knuckle hangs, and then you can pull it out and pull the CVs out, and then taking off the rear drive shaft and disconnecting all the wires and sensors to the transmission and all the wires and sensors to the engine and all of the intake plenum and all of the whole front end of the engine or front end of the car, the whole front clip. So that's the front bumper, radiator support, radiator, all that jazz. And yeah, it takes about 18 hours of solid straight work to get it done, just to get the engine out. Then you have to separate the engine from the transmission, take off the timing covers, get in there, redo the timing, replace all the parts, and put it all back together and put it back in, which takes even longer, because of course it does. So, yeah, fuck Audi for making their motor like that. That was a terrible idea. Yeah, that's the short and sweet of it. if you're a long-time listener, you heard me complain about that car over many, many episodes because I had to do that process multiple times to finally get it into a state that was kind of working.
Yeah.
And then I sold it, and it's somebody else's problem now.
And I'm sure they're very thankful.
Oh, yes, I'm sure. I actually talked to the guy not that long ago. And he ended up reselling it to somebody else. So he didn't keep it for that long.
Yeah.
But he was like, I haven't heard any complaints from the other guy who I sold it from, so I think it's still running just fine. I'm like, well, cool.
Damn, got never should have sold that car. You did the thing. You got it actually perfect, and then you sold it. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Buy it back.
Isn't that what you do? You get it perfect, and then you sell it because there's nothing left to do?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's my goal. With every car is just to get it perfect and then get rid of it so I can start on a new project. That's really the dumbest of ideas right there.
I'm being serious though.
Yeah, I want to enjoy the perfect car, to be honest.
I'm project oriented.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of what I did with the Subaru, is I got it running good and then I'm like, well, this is I don't want to do this shit again. So
yeah. But, no, that's the end of the Audi saga for me. Terrible idea to design your engine with the timing on the rear of the engine. But as far as a bad idea that I think a manufacturer would make, in classic Zach fashion, I have to go with Subaru. And I think that they should just send out
continue producing the motors that they make? Yes. I agree that's a bad idea.
Yes, it is. But I think that they should send out the STI as like a halo car, like one final version. Make it a coupe, make it all-wheel drive, make it six-cylinder, make it twin turbo, use the STI drivetrain that they've been producing forever because it's solid and stout, and just make a crazy STI their final iteration.
No, this was supposed to be bad ideas. This is supposed to be bad ideas. You misheard the assignment here.
I think that's a great idea, but like, they haven't built a six-cylinder engine in, what, like 5 years or something, so...
Yeah, at least.
They just take one of the ones they got, weld on two extra cylinders, done. Easy peasy.
Yeah, I think they should make the FA-24 like an FA-36.
Hell yeah.
And make it...
I mean, that is basically what the EZ-36 is. It was a prototype for the FA, almost, from what I understand.
Yeah, it's very similar architecture with, like, the timing chain set up and everything on the front of the motor.
Where it belongs.
Where it belongs, yes.
Although, you know what might be even better? A regular four-cylinder, but, like, pushing 25-plus pounds of boost.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, come on, wouldn't that be cool as shit? And then you could, like, tune it to, like, 32 or something? Like, whoa.
And they're going to put a warranty on this thing?
Right?
I mean, they're having trouble as it is.
They just need to build it really, really stout from the factory, which they'll never do.
Yeah.
Subaru engines are always just soft as fuck from the factory.
Glass hammers.
They need to put the... Yeah. They need to put the forged internals in bigger ring lands.
Yeah, I feel like forged internals actually should be the standard for any forced induction car ever.
Honestly, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know why they fuck around with not doing that.
Yeah. Quick side tangent. There's a Facebook group called Six Swapped Subarus, like the number six. So it's people that put, you know, EG or EZ or any of the... flat six? Anyways, they're putting six-cylinder engines in Subarus that didn't come in them, come with them. And there's someone, I forget what kind of Impreza he has, but he's putting a six-cylinder in the rear. So he's making it a rear-engine all-wheel drive car, like a 911. Yeah. And I think he's going to do some kind of force induction. But, like...
Yeah, that's Smedia.
Oh, that's is that who that is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He gave up on doing the six-cylinder turbo swap in the front. And so he's completely reimagining the project as a rear-engined, all-wheel drive, six-cylinder with the turbo.
Yeah. I just thought that was cool.
Yeah, for sure. No, as far as just the EG and the EZ, that's the only two six-cylinders I'm aware of that Subaru ever made. But
okay.
I definitely think it would be cool if they sent off the STI one last time in, like, some spectacular fashion. Like, make it make 500 horsepower, make it a coupe, make it have the six-speed all-wheel drive. Like, just make it something special to send it off with, because I think it's pretty much all but a foregone conclusion now that the next STI will be all electric.
Yeah, so I agree.
I would love to see one final gas-powered STI that's just bonkers.
You know, yeah, but, like, bonkers in a way that, like, absolutely designed to be, like, a Hellcat killer.
Yes.
Like, fucking, so something with, like, 650 horsepower in a lighter car and just, like, ready to beat the shit out of, like, 700-plus horsepower Chargers and, you know, Challengers. I think that'd be sick.
That would be absolutely so fucking cool. But that's my bad idea. Subaru will never do it. They would not make a lot of money on it because that's just not their market. So that's why I think it's a bad idea, but I think it would be really cool. As far as a bad idea that I want to do to a car, I really want to make my F-250 a off-road truck. Like full suspension, like hitting whoops and shit in a full-size crew cab F-250, I think would be fucking sick.
I'm going to say that is a bad idea, and yeah, I like it.
It's a bad idea for her, but...
Yeah. Keep it a diesel. Just build the 7.3 power stroke to make, like, 600 foot-pounds of torque and, like, 350 horsepower.
So it'd be really heavy and really long, which is not things you want for that kind of application, but...
Exactly.
I feel like, does the length, like, help at a certain point? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm stupid as shit. I don't know anything about off-roading, but, like...
No, I mean, most trophy trucks are built off, like, Ranger, Tundra, or Tacoma-sized chassis.
Mm.
Like, I mean, they're all tube-frame chassis, but, like, that's kind of the sizing.
Gotcha.
For most of them. You don't see a lot of, like, full-size or, like, bigger off-road trucks, but there are a few. There are a few that, like, people have made square bodies into off-road trucks, and it's, you know, it's a niche. It's not really something that's going to be competitive, but...
Aesthetically, my favorite lifted trucks are super long, like crew cabs and Suburbans and shit.
Yeah. I think it would be a sick fucking vibe, but, yeah, not exactly practical.
Yeah. I was driving home from work a few months ago and saw this absolutely massive lifted pickup truck. I forget what, if it was like a Dodge or a Ford or whatever.
What color was the underglow?
I don't think it had underglow, but like you could just about drive a car underneath this thing. It was ginormous. Like, I don't know if this guy needed like a ladder to get in and out of it or what, but it looks so fucking
That's
stupid.
Absurd. That's absurd.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, there's no practical application for that whatsoever. Like, it's just, it's purely aesthetic. And, like, not a good aesthetic either, in my opinion.
Right.
What's wrong with the aesthetic of my dad owns a dealership?
yeah, for real. Well, yeah, is that all the bad ideas that we can come up with?
Oh, no, I got plenty more.
I mean, yeah, we could come up with more, but, you know, we got
I didn't get to share mine, so...
I thought we skipped you, but...
I don't know why. I thought you went first, and then I was like, oh, it was so long ago, I don't remember. I've had a couple beers, so, you know.
It's all good. It's all good. I wanted to sort out my stuff here. So I linked it in the chat here, but there's a lot that... So I'm talking about the Chevy Vega. There's a lot that went wrong with that, with the design of it. Like they made a aluminum block and an iron head, which had issues.
It's backwards.
That seems like not the way you want to do that.
I think GM also did that with a Cadillac V8 in the 80s, the 4.9 liter or whatever.
Is that the North Star?
No, it was the one before the North Star.
Okay.
It was called the High Output. V8.
That's a notoriously bad motor as well.
Yeah.
The North Star.
If you're seeing a pattern, like GM has some bad ideas, I'm going to say. Especially
people
do
underestimate some of the late 60s, early 70s Caddy motors, though.
Yeah. Oh, no, those are good. I'm talking about the ones from the 80s. Those.
Oh, yeah. No, none of the big three were killing it in the 80s.
Yeah. I think it was called the High Output. It was a 4.9 liter, and it made like 160 horsepower or something like that.
The non-HO was probably like 152. I can't remember. There was some model where the high output, like SS version, was literally 5 horsepower more.
But the aspect of the Vega that I want to talk about is the air cleaner, the air filter. So most cars of that era, you had a 3-piece design where you have a lower metal pressed steel container, you have a round sort of donut shaped filter that goes in there, and then a lid that goes on top with a wing nut to hold it onto the carburetor. And someone at GM figured out that if we took that whole assembly and like glued it and crimped it together, we could save like, you know, 10 seconds per car on the assembly line of just plomping this down and doing up the wing nut. So, yeah, that's what they did. They made a 1-piece metal enclosure with the air cleaner included that anytime that you replace the air filter, you had to throw this away and get a new one.
Okay, not so great.
Yeah, and they said that...
It's fine. I'm sure they all got recycled.
Yeah. And they claimed in like the owner's manual that it would last 50,000 miles under normal driving conditions. I'm going to say that's probably a lie. You should definitely replace your air filter more often than that, like 12,000 miles, I think.
Was like the
air filter, I'm supposed to replace my air filter?
Was it like a different type of filter entirely? Like that it could even conceivably go longer than a normal air filter?
I don't think so. I think it was just a regular ass paper element air filter.
Yeah, okay.
So... I mean, you did get like Fram and other third-party manufacturers made replacements that was like a conventional setup where you have a, you know, 3-piece enclosure with the air filter. So yeah, I mean, like there was a solution to that, but like it's just like, what were you thinking? You saved a little bit on assembly, but you like pissed off the customers whenever they had to like replace the air filter.
Yeah, because otherwise the Chevy Vega had not a single flaw.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's one of those, it just, I'm always like, I always know that this is the answer. And so like, I throughout like the whole time we've had this podcast, it's always the answer that's like, well, it saved them some money. It increased their profits in some way. Like, that's how all of capitalism works. But you almost like,
it attempted every time,
every instance,
profits.
Yeah. Well, every time, every instance of it we come across is still always just like, but like, no, you didn't have to do that. And it's like, oh, yeah, they did. They had to save 10 seconds on the assembly line. Yeah, but at what cost?
Oh, literally 37 cents a unit.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm, you know, I wish that I for myself could, well, I don't wish this, but like, what if I could dedicate this much effort to saving like a fucking few cents? Man, my life would be so much better, or well, probably more boring, right? But it's crazy. Anyway, sorry.
No, that's all I had on the Vega, but like, as far as like, you know, like an idea that I think that GM should have done that would have not sold any cars, but I think it would be cool, would have been to make a high-performance all-wheel drive version of the Chevy Volt hybrid.
That's that just like the car that you horsepower. Wanted to buy, that you're like, that you want to
exactly.
Exist. Yeah.
Yeah. I want it to have 300 horsepower all-wheel drive and a hatchback.
I'm going to be honest. I feel like there's a market for that. There is definitely a market for that.
And I want it to get, you know, 45 miles per gallon.
Oh, Ford should have made the Supervan a thing you could actually buy.
Oh, was that the, like, with the F1 engine in it or something?
They've had a few iterations of it, but, yeah, they're all, like, one of them had, like, a GT40 engine. That was the cool one. Their most recent one was, like, a 1,000 horsepower hybrid that did Pikes Peak, I think.
Fucking awesome. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But they basically just take, like, a van body, and they're like, how much power can we cram into this?
Hell yeah.
And then as far as, like, stuff that I kind of want to do, I told you guys this on the group chat. I don't think it made it into the show last time, but I was looking at to see if it would be possible to put a Watts linkage from a Cruise onto my Bolt. And basically, when I was chopping for wheels from a Cruise in the junkyard, I did, you know, look underneath and look at the axle. And, you know, at first I thought, yeah, maybe it's possible to bolt right in. But then the more I looked at it, no, it would require some cutting and welding at the least. So I don't know if I actually want to do that. But maybe, Brandon, if you're here to build a cage for Zach, you can weld a Watts linkage onto my axle.
What? If there's a kit for it, sure.
There's not a kit for it, no. It would be taking junkyard parts and adapting them to fit.
Yeah, I feel like at that point you're better off just fabbing it from scratch.
I mean, yeah, but like, I could use at least some parts from the junkyard that would make it a lot easier than fabbing it from scratch.
I mean, a Watts linkage is super simple at its core. Yeah.
The thing that I will probably never do is, I forget if I told you guys about this, I'll put it in the chat here. There is a guy who has a Nissan Leaf that he decided it was too boring, so he put a superbike engine in the rear, driving the rear wheels.
Hell yeah.
So it's a Kawasaki something.
I hope this is in some way inspired by the Reliant Robin that I sent that had like the Hayabusa motor in it or something.
Yeah. I think I saw this earlier before that, but so I think it's actually a CBR 600 Honda motor. And then so it's got the electric motor up front driving the front wheels. So you can drive it just as a regular EV, or you can switch on the motorcycle engine in the rear. And I think he has a the subframe from a Lexus in the rear. So I first started making this connection with my Bolt because I was looking at the rear suspension of it and kind of the inadequacies of it. And I'm like, well, this is based on the same chassis as the Chevy Trax SUV, and that has an all-wheel drive option. Surely they must have done something a little bit better than the torsion beam, you know, rear axle. If they're doing all-wheel drive, they probably, you know, put in a whole different subframe for that or whatever. Nope. They just went with a torsion beam that they adapted for all-wheel drive for that chassis. But it did get me thinking, I could, you know, swap in that all-wheel drive axle with a motorcycle engine in the rear of my car. And it's got a pretty big size, like, underfloor storage area with, like, a, you know, spare tire well. Like, there's lots of room for activities in there. So, and it's all behind the battery, so you're not intruding into the battery at all. But yeah, I don't know. I think it would be kind of cool to have like another 100 or 200 horsepower driving the rear wheels in that car.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun.
And it would be more practical because it would be all-wheel drive, so it would be, you know, good in the snow. And it would have longer range because I could just fill it up. Yeah.
Wow, this is actually, you know what, this is very practical. It would
have longer range because I'm also using gasoline.
Exactly. So, and I don't know why the you know, shifter for the EV has a neutral mode, but I can just put it in neutral, and so then the front wheels aren't doing anything.
I mean,
I don't think it actually like shifts gears in the transmission. I don't think it actually has a neutral gear. I think it just turns off the electric motor basically when you put it in neutral. So I don't know what that that is for exactly. But
if you had to tow it or pull it up onto like a rollback or
I guess
I could think of a bunch of reasons you would want a neutral. Basically, all the reasons you would want a neutral in a regular car.
Right. But yeah, those are my dumb ideas for now. I'm sure I could come up with some more, but yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, on that note, we've pretty much nailed our time frame we were shooting for.
All right. First I wasn't paying attention, so that's good. Well, anything else before we wrap up here, guys?
No, nothing besides, you know, like our social media accounts and, you know, if you like what we do, go ahead and give us a good rating on your podcast app or whatever.
Yeah.
And then email us.
Email us with your own bad ideas.
Yeah.
carsandcomrades@gmail.com.
All right. That's it. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
We gonna make the fight fire with fire fists. We make you fight fire with water fists. We gonna fight racism, not racism, but we gonna fight with solidarity. We said we're not gonna fight capitalism with black capitalism, but we going to fight with socialism.
Amazingly, or not so amazingly, Cuba's crime rate is one of the lowest in the entire hemispheres. Oddly enough, it seems that when people have their basic human needs met, they're less likely to commit crimes.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
The free market mythology, it argues that the most ruthless, selfish, opportunistic, greedy, calculating plunderers, applying the most heartless measures in cold-blooded pursuit of corporate interest and wealth accumulation, will produce the best results for all of us. Through something called the invisible hand.
What are you smiling about?
Dude, I almost had you.